comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It's a delight to be here. I told you last night, and I've told you before, it's a privilege for me. I consider it a great honor each and every night just to have the privilege to be here with you, and I'm glad you're here. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Because you matter, we publish a free weekly newsletter each week. It is called The K-Files, and we've been publishing that for 12 years now, ever since the show began. Some of the folks that are subscribed right now subscribed way back then, so it must be pretty good, huh? They stuck with us. And if you're not subscribed, well, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but there's no genius in that. So here's what you do. Go look in the mirror, then come back, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe, and you're going to get an email right then. It has a link in it to activate your subscription, so do that. And then go back and look in the mirror again. This time you'll be looking at a genius. Pretty good deal, huh? All right, and it's absolutely free, no strings attached. No strings attached. You can unsubscribe anytime you decide to, so... It's just a good deal all the way around. I want to remind you that we have these Christmas special gift passes going on. All right? I really don't know how long we're going to keep offering those, but they're there right now. And the deal is you can give someone on your Christmas shopping list a gift pass to the Kevin Smith Show members community. Now, that's where all the goodies are. That's where you get to watch the show live every night. If you happen to miss it, you can still watch the captured video of the show for the next 24 hours. Then there are the archives where you can listen to the show. And we're literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of archives there already. And the forums, the chat room, you get your own blog, you get your own profile page, you get your own photo album and your own video album where you can upload photos and videos and all that kind of good stuff. And, you know, the great thing about it is normally it's only $7.50 a month. That's 25 cents a day. But if you want to give it as a gift, you know, you might not want to be paying $7.50 every month as a gift to someone. So you give them a one-month gift pass for $10. How about that? One-month gift pass, and they have full access to all of that stuff for $10. Or you can give them 2 months for $18. So you save a little money by giving 2 months. If you're interested in that, and I hope you are, go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. kevinsmithshow.com. Click on the ad. You'll see it. It's right in the middle of your screen. And go ahead and set up one of those gift passes for somebody. And we'll be more than happy to have them with us for the month or 2 months. And then if they wish to continue, they can pick it up on their own. All right, we're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is somebody that's been with us before, and we're really privileged to have him with us. His name is Mike Fortson. Now, the reason I say we're really privileged to have him with us, aside from the fact that he's a heck of a nice guy, he has really an encyclopedic knowledge of this event that has come to be known as the Phoenix Lights. And that's also kind of an unfortunate misnomer because it was not the Phoenix Lights. There were several states involved in that, not just Phoenix, Arizona. But everybody knows it by that name, so that's we'll call it that for tonight, just so you know what we're talking about. And it was not just lights. That's another misnomer. But Mike Fortson is with us, and I appreciate him taking time out of his schedule to be with us again. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Mike, I had said that it's a misnomer, and I, of course, I can see here in the studio, even before you're up on the screen where everybody can see you, I can see the monitor, and I said it's a misnomer. It's not just the Phoenix Lights. There were several states involved, and I saw you nod.
That's correct.
So let's go back to, I believe it was 1997, wasn't it?
March 13th, Thursday evening, 1997.
All right, let's go back. What happened?
When you say other states, a lot of people don't realize how true that is. It was throughout the entire state of Arizona, southern Nevada, New Mexico, California, northern Mexico, Iowa, Nebraska, and Virginia.
All on the same night?
Yes, sir.
Well, actually, it started before nightfall, didn't it?
5:30 in Crown King was the very first, and that's before the sun went down. It was still dusk. Excuse me, on March 13th, 5:30, the sun had set, but it's still light out. Crown King's probably 90 miles north-northwest of Phoenix. It's where we have Sunset Point, where at the peak there's a rest stop. It's just south of Bumblebee and Crown King, and it's a rest stop, and there were a lot of people there, tourists mostly. If you look to the west there, it's real scenic, a lot of mountains. And at that point, it's your final destination before you go down the hill to get to Phoenix. And there were 16 witnesses at Crown King that took time to file reports. And that was one of the things that irks me the most is this sighting, is it fails to get reported properly. No producer will put it on video. And the reason is this. 16 witnesses. Mm-hmm. They observed all three of the giant V-shaped craft. Two fighter jets were coming from the south. The three V-shaped craft pancaked on top of each other, forming one object, formed a white ball of light, and vanished. And this is, they changed shape, and then they vanished. And it does things that we just can't do, mm-hmm. and yet no one will really touch that. And, you know, producers will say, well, I don't want to confuse the viewer. Well, instead of confusing the viewer, you're lying to them. Because there's more than just one string of red lights that went from Kingman, Arizona, through Phoenix, and down to Tucson, turned around and went back up north, back to Area 51. That's what they want you to believe. There were actually three of those V-shaped crafts, as well as one two-mile-wide triangle. And a lot of people just won't touch that. So I retired from video. I refuse to do video. I do your show, talk radio, where I get a chance to speak. It's unedited. They don't have a chance to cut the tape and put it on the floor and basically deceive people. And, you know, the main thing is, Kevin, is it's a very complex case. There's 14, 15, maybe even 20 different events throughout the state of Arizona that happened that night. Only one or two of them happened over Phoenix, and yet they call it the Phoenix Lights. Mm-hmm. And I know why they call it Phoenix Lights. If you want to know, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Go ahead and say why they call it Phoenix Lights. People might want to know.
It's because all six of those 10 o'clock flare videos were taken from mountainside homes looking south, and at the bottom of the video was the metro lights of the Phoenix area. And in the distance was the flares. And that's where it got the name Phoenix Lights. It's those flare videos only. Mm-hmm. I like to use the title the massive UFO flyover of Arizona, March 13th, 1997. And that's more exact to me, and the things that I talk about and write about is because it entailed the entire state. I mean, just dozens and dozens and dozens of cities and counties throughout the state of Arizona had sightings, and they all didn't see the same thing, because all the witnesses will tell you how incredibly low it was, how slow it was. It made no noise whatsoever, and it was the biggest thing they've ever seen in their life. Witnesses were using multiple aircraft carriers, multiple baseball fields, soccer fields, the biggest things that they could imagine, multiple, two or three, four, five times. So,
when you say they were using them, what do you mean they were using them?
Well, they were using the biggest thing that they could think of, like an aircraft carrier or a baseball field, soccer field, city block. I mean, as the craft passed in front of me, I held out my left hand at the nose of the craft and stretched my right hand out to the end of the left wing, and it was over 34 inches. So if you're looking at an airplane, I don't know, just coming, like we have here in Arizona where I live, we have a lot of air traffic from going to and coming from Sky Harbor, 737s mostly. But if you see a 737 about the same distance away, mm-hmm. it's like a quarter of an inch at arm's length. This thing was 33, 34 inches at arm's length. And thousands of people saw this, not just a few. And it really has. I wrote a story called The Non-Investigation of the Phoenix Lights. And it basically is a story that there's so many things that have been left out that people aren't aware of, that they should be aware of, that producers fail to put this in their documentaries because they don't want to confuse the viewer. So instead they lie to them.
No. How, I'm a little confused, and maybe you can explain it to me, how it is that telling the truth about what happened would confuse us. Where do they get that notion?
There are a variety of events that happened where witness reports talk, just like I talked about, three objects pancaking on top of each other, forming a white ball of light and vanishing. Okay. Something like that will never make the airwaves, won't make a documentary, it just will not be put on film. And it's not because the producer there that's interviewing me or any other witness at the time, it's basically the powers that be above them that will say absolutely no way, and it may have to do with advertisers, but I think it has more to do with the powers that be that own the radio stations, TV stations, the documentaries that I do, like History Channel, Discovery, National Geographic. I mean, they all know the stories. I've told the same thing to all of them, and yet none of them will put it on there. Not even my good friend James Fox in Out of the Blue or I Know What I Saw, and I was in both of those, but he just won't take it to the next level of things that are accurate, that did happen. There are witnesses, but they just won't put it on TV.
Well, let's talk about something that happened that I think, I know I didn't know about this, and I think there are a lot of people who didn't know, and that is reports of people who saw entities.
Yes.
Related to this UFO flurry that night over Arizona. So let's talk about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Max and Shala Saracen were the first that I met and I talked to, and I did a Discovery special with them. Shala Saracen, the triangle, you got to understand, the triangle that they saw was so low to the ground that it was a, you know, we saw the V shape, but she had the triangle with the back closed. We saw the V, like I'm showing you, and then they saw the triangle here. The back windows of the triangle, Shala Saracen saw beings moving around. And that was in the initial reports, MUFON reports. That was talked about a lot, but it just never made the air. There are several instances where people saw beings through the windows of the craft. Yes.
Did they describe what they saw?
No. Just movement, beings moving. There was movement, and they were beings. They had a head. That's about all I can tell you. But, I mean, it wasn't up close. It wasn't like they were 10 feet away. They were still some distance away, several hundred yards. But still, she could still see movement with lights in the background, beings looking out the window. It's like a giant cruise ship and people were, beings were moving around. Maybe even people, I don't know. My impression was it's quite possible they were just human.
Well, they may be. And then again, this could be like a galactic cruise line, and yes. Who knows? Yes. In their language, it may be painted on the side, the gigantic.
Well, we won't know the answer to that. I mean, I really hope I get to see it again. I really hope I get a chance to even take it to the next level above that and find out. I have a lot of questions I'd like to ask.
All right. Now, the craft that you saw a V-shape. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, you could use the term V-shape, boomerang shape, or chevron shape, and they're all accurate.
Okay.
They are. But as it passed in front of us, all I really could see was the left wing of the craft. That's how low it was. And once it passed to the south, I could see that there was a right wing to it. And there is an animation I could send you. I think I may have in the past, but I'd be gladly send people the animation that Tom King did back in 97. It's very accurate. Very accurate. Yes, and it was a V-shape. It was not closed in the back end as a triangle is.
Well, you know this account that you've told us about, the where you had 16 witnesses at the rest stop, and I know that rest stop well.
Yes.
I've stopped there on the way up to Flagstaff and also on the way up to Window Rock. I've stopped and just spent some time out walking around and waking up and that sort of thing. And it's a beautiful spot. You had 16 witnesses there who see three of the V-shaped craft, two fighter jets coming from the south.
Yes.
The V-shaped craft stack on top of each other like pancakes, turn into a ball of light, and then flash, and they're gone, right?
It wasn't as if they took off. It just vanished.
Yeah.
They didn't see it take off at a high rate of speed or anything like that. It was, and it's something where you see, if you could imagine seeing that, which I did not see this, I just, I'm aware of the reports, but to see something change shape from massive V-shaped craft and change shape into a white ball of light and then just vanish. You know, I said this on an interview I did back in 97 with Francis Barwood. And the guy asked me, he goes, where do you think they're from, Mike? My only question about the whole thing is I really truly believe that there's some type of interdimensional part to this because they changed shape and they left without a trace. I mean, they just vanished. We just don't have that technology. And it wasn't a hologram or it wasn't any of these things. It happened. And the fighter jets got to that area, they've circled around, and they went back to Luke Air Force Base. That's just west of Glendale. And go ahead.
Yeah, well, didn't Luke Air Force Base say at one point anyway that they had no knowledge of any events taking place and that they did not scramble any jets?
That's correct. I have a copy of the Freedom of Information Act that John Greenwald applied for back in 97 to Luke Air Force Base. And Luke Air Force Base did not mention the word flares. They don't know where the word flares came from, which I do believe. And they do have airplanes in the air, but it's on routine training missions, which is true. There's training missions where they touch and go at night and day and dusk and dawn and all this. But the bottom line is Luke Air Force Base and the Freedom of Information Act did not call them anything other than unusual aerial objects. And that caught my eye, and yet nobody's really written about that or talked about that. But they didn't use the term UFOs. They used the term unusual aerial objects, which to me is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people just don't take the time to read. They don't do their homework, and the Freedom of Information Act is out there for everybody to see. They called it a very unusual phenomenon also in the Freedom of Information Act, which I thought was unusual. But to call them unusual aerial objects, I mean, that's a UFO.
Yeah, it is. Well, here's another thing. Whenever they say object, That pretty specifically means it was painted on their radar.
Yes, and S was plural, unusual aerial objects. Yes, they recognized there were multiple, there were more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And the word that was put out right after March 13th, when the, you know, there was not a lot of hysteria going on. There was just people wanting to know what it was. There was people outside looking at Hillbop to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an unusual amount of people at 8:30 at night out looking at the sky. And there's just a lot of people called, TV, radio. I mean, they called anybody that would answer the phone, just ask them what it was. But it was highly unusual. But there wasn't a mass hysteria. There was a very tranquil feeling by all the witnesses, all of them, as to how peaceful it was. They used the words like benevolence, tranquility. It was peaceful. You know, it wasn't these things like Hollywood movies where it's doom and gloom and destruction and death and abduction and all this. Nothing. Nothing was disturbed. As low as these craft were passing by, if you weren't up looking up, you would never have known it was there.
All right. We've got about a minute and a half here.
I would like to say something I could real
mm-hmm.
quick. The government put out the word immediately that at no point in time was there ever a threat to our national security. Now, I'm ex-military. I was in the Navy, 71 to 75. And if you're not a threat, you're a friendly. I mean, it's either one or the other. So at no point in time was there ever a threat to our national security. It lets me know they knew, they were aware it was there. They knew there was no threat. And that was about all they're going to release. But there was no threat to our national security. I found that intriguing, because they identified it as a friendly.
Absolutely. Well, and you don't put out a statement that there was no threat if there was no event.
Exactly. And at no point in time is a flare a threat.
Well,
in the desert.
Out in the desert, dropping flares at night, you could start a fire out there. But
they only drop those flares. Those flares are LUU-2 flares. They drop them at 6,000 feet. They ignite at 3,000 feet. They extinguish at 500 feet. And there's not really that much of a threat. But those flares are only over the Barry Goldwater Range. That's it.
And actually, we can get into this after the break because we do have a break coming up. But actually, it would be difficult to see those flares over the Barry Goldwater Range if you're standing in Phoenix. We'll
be
back.
If you're on the valley floor.
All right, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is the Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is the Mike Fortson. And we're talking about what popularly is called the Phoenix Lights, and that's a huge misnomer because it happened over several states and even northern Mexico. But that's what we're talking about. And as we went away for that break, Mike, I was... talking about that the, you know, for those who somehow by some feat are not aware of what happened after the event, the military flew over and dropped flares, and that was like at 10 o'clock, something like that, and then put out the story after they had already said, well, we didn't have any aircraft, we don't know what you're talking about. Then they put out the story. Oh yes, the Maryland National Guard were on exercise and they were dropping flares. And the problem is they're 2 hours late, and flares don't look like the stuff people described. Also, if they were dropping the flares over the Barry Goldwater Range, if that's where it was, and you're in Phoenix, you have to look over mountains to see to the Barry Goldwater Range. 6,000 feet at that distance, that's not high enough to see it if you're standing on the valley floor. Is that correct?
That's correct. I can explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Standard operating procedure for the LUU-2 flare that's dropped by the A-10 Warthog, and that's what the Maryland Air National Guard and their Operation Snowbird were doing, is they were just doing standard flare drops, bomb runs at Barry Goldwater Range. Standard procedure is 6,000 foot, it drops, 3,000 feet, it ignites, and it'll extinguish itself at 500 feet. Now, the reason these flares were seen by Mountainside Homes in six videos, and Mountainside Homes are probably 800 to 1,500 feet higher than on the valley floor. And Dr. Bruce McAbee came out here and he did his triangulation and he configured that those flares had to have ignited at 16,000 foot in order to be seen by Mountainside Homes in the Phoenix area. Now, you're totally correct. If they ignite at 3,000 feet, nobody ever sees them in the Phoenix area. These were dropped incredibly high. This is not standard operating procedure to drop a flare 3 miles up. Okay, that's not standard for them. But in order to be seen, 16,000 foot was Dr. McAbee's elevation that they had to have ignited. And that's why nobody reports seeing flares in the Phoenix area in the last 16 and a half years since the Phoenix lights. There is no flares being seen because they're always doing them at the proper method of operation. 6,000 foot they drop, 3,000 they ignite. But on March 13th at 10 o'clock, a little bit after, people in Mountainside Homes saw, you know, everybody's seen the videos, because every time they talk to on a video, every time they interview a guy like me, is they'll put those flares, the flare footage in the background. And that's what they are. They're flares. I mean, we've
Well, as a matter of fact, because there are, as far as I know, no pictures of the actual Phoenix, quote, Phoenix lights, the only thing that's out there are those flare pictures. And so I used one of those on the website because we don't have anything else.
There is one 8:30 video that was taken by Terry Proctor. It is not timed and dated, as you're supposed to do if you're going to record these things. You need to have it timed and dated. But it is 8:30. It's incredibly grainy. I have a copy of it. I'd gladly email it to you if you'd like to have it.
I would.
And it's just 8:30. Terry Proctor. It's very quick. It's grainy. It doesn't really show what we're looking for. And most people don't want to use it. But where he was at in North Phoenix, he shot it, and supposedly it was around 8:30 on March 13th. This video came out, I don't know, several weeks later. But the part about it is, on your camera, you should have time and date if you're going to do this. And only one of all the seven videos I think collected had March 13th, 1997 on it, and none of them had it timed. And that, of course, what are you going to do? I mean, if you have your camera, you don't know you're getting ready to shoot something like this. So I can totally understand that. But there is one video, and they don't like using it or talking about it because it's so grainy and rough.
Can you see the object?
Not the object, but you see lights. And he didn't have the type of camera in 1997 where the lights would be red versus they show up as white. I think it's like a Panasonic VHS. It's one of the old shoulder mounts that they used to have, and they're meant for daytime shooting and not nighttime.
Okay, but you can see the lights, and I guess from that
yes,
you can judge the size.
You can tell it's in a V formation. It is turning. You have to watch it many, many, many times to try to figure out what it is he's seeing. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I mean, you know, you can tell, yes.
Uh-huh.
It is grainy, it is rough, there's a lot of static. It's like the old black and white TV, you know. I mean, there's a lot of grains to it. People don't like seeing that. It's like a video that a guy named Scott Montgomery has way out in the west. He was shooting at 10 o'clock. He was shooting the orbs that were over Luke Air Force Base. There was two of the red orbs over Luke Air Force Base, and he had one of these video cameras where it didn't have a window that pops out. He was looking through the eye hole, and he was filming the orbs, filming the jets chasing the orbs. It's the story from truck driver Bill Greiner that Scott Montgomery has on tape, and yet the kid was so excited. I mean, it was the worst video you could ever imagine. And I tell people, I said, look, don't watch the video. Just close your eyes and listen to the excitement in this kid's voice and the adrenaline rush he's going through. You know, he's seeing something here. And yet, you know, the people at MUFON did not like that video because it wasn't very professional. Mm-hmm. But you don't need that. I mean, just listen to the audio. I mean, you can get the gist of what Scott was going through when he was watching that.
Well, I want to address video for just a moment, and then there's something I want to bring up about the guy who was the governor of the state at that time. All right, but with video, you know, it's really, really frustrating because on the one hand, I will say this, I will agree that these days it is so easy for people to fake video. They can buy the software, and heck, you can download free software that is sufficient to do this. And then they fake videos of UFOs. But we hear from the debunkers, you show them a video like the one you're talking about, and you did send me that one. I've seen that one. Or somebody sent it to me with the Scott Montgomery video. Either you or somebody sent it to me. I've seen it. And
it's
you're
funny.
Right. Yeah, you're right. A lot of excitement, a lot of jumping around.
Yeah.
But the debunkers will say, well, in this day and age when everybody's got a camera and they're almost all of them are HD cameras, you know, why don't we get any clear shots of UFOs? Okay. That's one thing they say. So then somebody comes up with a freaking clear shot of a UFO, and they say, well, it's obviously fake. It's so clear, you know. And so they want it both ways. It's a fake because it's not clear. It's a fake because it is clear. And the fact is, these debunkers are the fakes. They're the frauds.
Yes. Yes.
I've invited them
to do that.
Well, I've invited them to come. You know, you feel like debunking? Come ahead. Come on my show. And I have had no takers.
I've done a variety of radio shows with a guy down in Tucson by the name of James McGahey. And he's the one that does CNN with Larry King when he had James Fox and Governor Symington on there. And James McGahey, I continually rip this guy apart because all he talks about in the Phoenix Lights case is the 10 o'clock flares while I'm trying to tell people about what we saw in the 8 o'clock hour. And it's
or
two
how about
things.
At 5:30?
Yeah, well, 5:30, the 8 o'clock hour, 10:25 up in Cave Creek. I mean, I can go on. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, I know quite a bit about the events, and they just won't touch it. I mean, it's flares. You saw A-10s. Well, let me tell you something. I was raised in the Air Force. I was born in London, England. My dad was Air Force. I grew up near Grissom Air Force Base in Indiana. They had A-10s there in the early 70s, and A-10s are loud. He goes, well, you saw a B-2 bomber. Well, I'm sorry, but do you ever watch the Indianapolis 500 when the B-2 bomber flies over? That thing is incredibly loud. And I did a radio show with this guy, Preston Westmoreland. I'm sure you've heard of him when mm-hmm. he was living here in the Valley. And I was on KTAR radio back in June of 97. That's when USA Today broke the story about the 8 o'clock hours. And the guy called up and he goes, Mike, you know, he says, with all due respect, you saw a B-2 bomber. And I told him, I says, well, sir, with all due respect to you, and you could land all 40 of our B-2 bombers on the wing of that craft. And it was just dead silence. And people didn't know what to say or anything else in that radio station. And they, after about 5 seconds, they went to commercial. But that gives you an idea of just how big this thing was. And, you know, I can take these guys on. I mean, I don't mind it whatsoever. They call
either.
Themselves skeptics, Kevin, and they're not skeptics. I'm a skeptic. You know, they are liars and debunkers. I mean, they, for some reason, they have to say what they say. It's almost as if they're getting paid to say it.
Yeah, or maybe they say it because they hope somebody will pay them to say it. All right, I want to talk about Symington.
Sure.
Now, I've been rough on Symington. I have not changed my opinion.
Good.
And, you know, he may be a fine person. He may be a fine individual. That's not what's up for discussion here. But when he was governor and all of this happened, you know, he said, we're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to find out what's going on. And then we're going to report it to the people. The next thing we hear from him is there's going to be a press conference. He comes out and he says, we have found what happened. We have the perpetrator. And they bring this jerk out. And again, the jerk may actually be a very fine individual, but this act, he was a jerk. Dressed like an alien and made a big joke out of it and ha ha ha. Now Symington comes along and he says, well, I did see it. But then he says, but, you know, things were almost in hysteria, and I had to do something to defuse the situation. There was no hysteria.
No.
None. Zero. No. Except, perhaps, at the governmental level, all of the people trying to keep the lid on the secret may have been in hysterics because everybody in all over those states saw it.
Yes. But the thing that gets me about this, and I'm going to go from, we're going to start in June of 1997, when the USA Today story broke on June 18th, 1997, about the 8 o'clock events. And that was the first national publication talking to the witnesses about what happened in the 8 o'clock hour, aside from the flares at 10 o'clock. And he didn't really, he hadn't said anything in 3 months. The sighting was March 13th. This was June 18th, 3 months later. And finally, once, you know, there was a big demand for witnesses and everything else after the USA Today story broke. And Symington, that's the date of his, when he came on TV and says, we're going to get to the bottom of this. And he said, he told everybody, we're going to have a press conference later in the afternoon. And that's when that happened. And that was in 1997. On the 10-year anniversary, James Fox and Leslie Kane, worked together to get Governor Symington on video, which came out in the video, I think it was I Know What I Saw by James Fox. And Symington now is an 8 o'clock witness himself. And, you know, I just, a lot of us were just sick to our stomach on this. And the reason for it is he made statements on the History Channel.
Hang on. We have a break taking over. And we'll pick up right there with a story about Symington right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Mike Fortson, and we're talking about the event most of the world knows as the Phoenix Lights. As we went away for our break, Mike, we'd just begun to discuss this whole event with former governor of Arizona, Symington. And first, he's doing this press conference where he makes fun of this. And then on the 10-year anniversary, he says, you know, I saw it. And you said it made a lot of the actual witnesses sick. And you started to tell us why. So why? Why wouldn't you want him saying this?
Well, it's not that nobody wanted him to say this. It's that people did not believe him.
Uh-huh.
What he did, and it came out on James's James Fox's documentary called "I Know What I Saw,"
okay,
and it was shown on the History Channel, I believe it was History Channel, and anyway, he just said things that no one else had ever reported.
Maybe he saw things nobody else saw.
He said he was at the park with his dog, and there were other people at the park as the thing passed over their heads.
Okay,
number one. Governor Symington's not a hard guy to miss. He's like 6'6". I mean, he's tall. Everybody knows him. He was involved in a lawsuit. He was, you know, he had a lot of things going on. If there were other people that he saw there, they would have seen him. And early on, nobody reported, oh yeah, I was at the park, we saw the craft, and Governor Symington was there. Nobody ever said that. But here's something else. As he said, it came from the west. There are no witnesses that said the large craft came from the west. He used the term, it came to the west by the White Tank Mountains. Well, White Tank Mountains are west of Luke Air Force Base. Okay, so then it became Squaw Peak on another interview that he did. Leslie Kane did the special for History Channel called UFO Secret Access. She got a private interview with Governor Symington. Governor Symington said he was in his home. They were listening to either TV or radio in the 8 o'clock hour. Somebody interrupted and it came in and talked about the mass sightings that were going on in Phoenix. Now, the problem with that is the first sighting in the Phoenix area was 825. And that was up north by Tim Lee, where he was up around Squawk Peak and everything else. That was around 825. And for somebody to immediately call a radio station or a TV station and them to immediately break in and report this, that's unheard of. They have to check it out. It takes time. The first news or radio that came on the air on March 13th, 1997, was around 10 o'clock when they started talking about this. And it was on the news and everything. Not in the 8 o'clock hour, but the 10 o'clock hour. And that's where part of the problem is right there. I mean, there's got to be accuracy. Everything's documented. Michael Tanner has a huge map of all the witnesses that called in that they know about. You just don't have one of the large craft coming in from the west heading east. You have the northwest, you have the north, you have the east with the triangle, but nothing straight from the White Tank Mountains. There is no witnesses that will say that. Orbs, yes, over Luke Air Force Base.
If it came in from the west by the White Tank Mountains, it would have had to pass over Luke Air Force Base, would it not?
Yes. And besides that, he's in Phoenix. He's 45 miles away from the White Tanks. He made a mistake when he used White Tank Mountains. And then it became Squaw Peak, which you know is north.
Right.
And, you know, and then he keeps changing his story. And I have a problem with witnesses that change their story. Mine's boring because I've been talking about the same thing for 16 years and 6 months. You know, you just don't change the story. You don't change. If you saw it, fine. Write about it. You know, tell people about it. File a report. But don't change the direction. Don't change things. I don't believe he was an 8 o'clock witness. I do not.
And so you don't think his story is true?
No. I've been trying through James Fox and Leslie Kane are friends of mine, mm-hmm. and I've been in both James' documentary. I'm in Leslie Kane's documentary, and I've been trying for the last 3 years through them to sit down with former Governor Fife Symington, just to sit down with him, witness to the large craft, to witness to the large craft, and compare notes. I truly want to look in his eyes when he tells me his story, and it won't happen. It won't happen. And they've tried. They know. James and Leslie both know. And, you know, they didn't do their homework before they made the documentaries. I mean, that's the fact. They did not do their homework. They did not ask the right questions. They just, Governor agreed to be on film, and boom, they did it. And the rest is history. He got the gig at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Later that year. They had astronauts, pilots from all over the world there. Big oop-de-doo, and it was all real nice, and he gave his speech. Now, here's another thing. I can look you in the eye and tell you my sighting verbatim and all other people's sightings, and I don't need to read off a paper. When Symington talks about his sighting, he has to look down and read his notes. He has to read his report from a piece of paper. And I had a problem with that because of all the witnesses I've talked to, nobody had to read to talk, and that I just found that strange. I'm not offended that he won't meet with me. I mean, I'm just Joe Schmo. I'm just a peon. And I understand that, you know, he's a big guy, former governor and all that. And he doesn't owe me to visit with me to discuss our sightings. But I really know that he doesn't want to meet with me, because I would see right through him. I would. I don't want to sound conceited on that, but it's true.
So why do you think, I mean, all right, I can see political benefit for him doing what he did with the press conference in terms of political benefit with other politicians at his level and above. So poo-pooing the whole thing as he did, I can see where he cashes in and gets some political clout there and some support of some kind. I don't know. All right, so here we go 10 years later. What benefit is there to Symington for him to come out with a story like this if it's not true?
It got him back in the limelight. Got him in 3 documentaries, books, CNN, Larry King. You know, got him back in video. I mean, I can't really answer that. Mm. Now, there was a benefit from what he did back in 97 because he's a Republican. Okay, first of all, we need to talk about that. Governor Symington was a Republican governor. When he was found guilty in his trial, 6 months later, something like that, he was pardoned by Democratic President Bill Clinton. Now, you don't usually see Democrats pardoning Republicans, but he did.
So you think, what I'm hearing is that you think that was a payoff for him poo-pooing all this in the press conference?
Absolutely. Democrats don't pardon Republicans, and Republicans don't pardon Democrats. Mm-hmm. This doesn't happen. And he was rewarded. He basically, in 97, he got half the people to believe that it was no big deal. We all were kind of, the word hysteria, he used that.
Yeah.
And there was no hysteria. People were talking about just how peaceful the event was, their involvement, and how friendly it was. You would think that if I suggest, from the nose of the craft to the end of the left wing was over a mile long, that if you see something like this with all the movies in Hollywood and everything else out there, that would cause a panic or it'd startle you. But it did none of that. Nobody dove under their bed or ran to the mountains or loaded their gun, or there wasn't any of that. It was peaceful. It was tranquil. There was no hysteria. There was no panic. It was a peaceful event. It was a very friendly event.
Okay. So let's talk about, I don't know personally. I do not know if the pardon was a payoff, but the timing is curious, and you make a good point. It's a Democratic president pardoning a Republican governor. Very curious indeed on that. But let's assume, okay, that's it. Just for the sake of our talk. Okay, let's assume that that's correct. Now, we go 10 years down the road, and he steps up and says, well, I did see it. One of the curious things to me is that he was a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
And if he saw this as a pilot, I think he would have been way more than astounded. And I would think that he would have known exactly who to call to find out what could be known, because he used to be a fighter pilot and now he's a governor. So he's got the connections.
Yes.
Do you suspect that he actually did find out, that he actually made those calls and found out? We'll get the answer when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from that first hour. And my best and most sincere wishes, hopes, prayers that you never suffer that tragedy again. We're talking this evening with Mike Fortson, who has really an encyclopedic knowledge of this whole event, bunches of events that together are referred to as the Phoenix Lights. It was not just Phoenix. It was several states and northern Mexico. You know, the flare story, for those of you who want to buy into that, could the people in other states see those flares way down in Arizona? No. Anyway, Mike is with us. Mike, just to let you know, during the last few minutes before we went to that break, your video froze.
Now, I saw that.
Yeah, now there's no video, but that's okay. We got a picture of you that we'll put up, okay? Not a problem. Okay, so I asked the question. I said, you know, Fife Symington was Air Force fighter pilot, and then he becomes governor. As governor and as a former fighter pilot, he would have known who to contact and would have had the connections to be able to contact them. Do you suspect that he did?
Sure.
So do you suspect
there was he's not involved in the Phoenix city council meetings or anything by no means, but Francis Barwood brought that up early on. I know they were talking about it. I know there's two state senators that were witnesses themselves in the 8 o'clock hour. I do know that he said he contacted Senator John McCain, or another Republican. As far as the public knows, Senator McCain only came back with, they didn't know what it was in the 8 o'clock hour, and 10 o'clock was flares. Uh-huh. That's about as far. A lot of that just wasn't, we're not privileged to that.
Yeah, but you think he got? My question is: do you think he got the privileged information and was told, "Okay, it was UFOs, but we expect you to cover it up"?
Well, only he and the judge knows for sure, and anybody that would have made that call. He was called into the judge's chambers before he came out and had his little spiel with that aide that had the alien head on. Francis talked about that on a couple shows that she did.
Well, she talked about it here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Francis is very, very good friends with me and my wife, her and Mike, and they're up in Dewey. We contact them. We know a lot. We're very good friends. And she suspects, and she's even said that the judge had something to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, cool your jets a little bit, you know, so to speak, in our language anyway. But, like I said, the government came out and said at no point in time was there ever a threat to our national security. So they were aware, yes. I do believe that Symington would have made the call. I mean, if we were governors, I'm sure we would.
Yeah.
We get to the bottom what the heck this was. It flew over our Capitol. It flew over Sky Harbor Airport. It was seen by tens of thousands of witnesses from 5:30 through the 8 o'clock hour. 9:30, 10:30 up in Cave Creek. That's where retired airline captain Trigg Johnson had his sighting, and he was told by telepathy, "We are not a threat." All this stuff was out there. So yes, he would have tried. Yes, as governor of the state of Arizona, yes, I'm sure he would have tried something to find out what it was.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to open up our telephone lines now. And you and I will continue chatting, but I want to open up the telephone lines and invite the audience to join us and to join the conversation. You do that, folks, by dialing 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we have an additional feature for you, and the additional feature is a flash message. So you can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. You get over there, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and when you do, what you need to do is look right above it, and you'll see that there's a link that says flash message, all right? To the telephones, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington here.
Hi, Ryan.
Yes, Mike, I had a question. For the witnesses that witness actual entities, I'm interested in that. Are they still around? And the other question is, what do you think was going on at the national defense level as far as, do you think there was a meeting in the Pentagon or, I mean, somebody had to have been told about this at the national level. I mean, there had to have been an alert placed out or something. I mean,
okay,
you don't just
let's find
out. Craft flying around without NORAD knowing about it or.
Okay, let's let him answer.
As far as staying in contact with witnesses, keep in mind it's been almost, 1997. So you have their names, you have their phone numbers. A lot of this is archived. Michael Tanner, who ran Village Labs with Jim Dellatoso, had the most extensive archive that I know of. Richard Motzer, the former MUFON investigator, did have names and numbers, and yes, a lot of these entities Motzer has reports on, and, you know, unfortunately, Richard Motzer passed away about 2 months ago, but the archives are still there. He's been doing interviews with Frank Warren for the last 4 or 5 months, hours and hours and hours of tape, video, so the answer is going to be yes. Shala Saracen was the one that I knew, and her and Max, I think they've moved out of Arizona. I haven't stayed in direct contact with them, but to answer your question, yes, there's still names. We don't know if they're still in the area, 16 years. You know, we move around a lot.
Let me just ask this, and then I'll get off the line. If anybody, who do you think knows exactly? I mean, we're chasing around in circles here, it seems to me, that what we need to really do is get to the bottom brass here. What actually happened? Possibly the Native Americans are the only ones that actually know what happened that day. I mean, who else is really going to know? Does anybody have the answers to this? That's my question, and I'll just get off the line. Thanks.
Well, Space Command, I mean, in Colorado knows. We had
all right, Mike,
hang on a second.
Hang on a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me say this. We know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It's one of the best attested and best documented mass sightings ever.
Yes.
So we know exactly what happened. Now, the question is, who's driving those things? That's the question. Now, go ahead.
Well, the thing is something happened early on March 13th, or maybe even March 12th, that we found out later. And there was a spy satellite that's an Air Force asset called the MSTI-3, MSTI-3. It's third generation micro satellite if you search MSTI-3, it's made by Spectrum Astro in Gilbert, Arizona, which I talked to one of the engineers in 97. The strange thing was MSTI-3 lost power on March 13th, 1997, lost power and went into elliptical orbit. MSTI-3's job was to photograph incoming hot objects from space. MSTI-3 did not look at license plates and cars and movement. MSTI-3 looked outward. Okay? MSTI-3, in my opinion, and according to one of the engineers at Spectrum Astro, which is now Orbital Sciences, took some photographs, and instead of being destroyed, its batteries were depleted, and it went into elliptical orbit where the solar panels recharged the batteries, and 2 or 3 weeks later, it was up and running again. And strangely enough, in October of 1997, that satellite was ordered destroyed by the U.S. Army with their Miracle laser. It's MIRCL laser in White Sands, New Mexico. There was a big article about it in the New York Times, and it was the subject of a laser shot in 1997. First attempt failed. Second attempt was successful, but it did not destroy the satellite. And in December of 1997, Misty 3 was ordered to deorbit, and it crashed just before Christmas in the Pacific Ocean, just east of Hawaii. The answer that we're looking for is going to be at the U.S. Space Command in Cheyenne, I think, or Colorado, I think it's U.S. Space Command. That's going to be the place. Now, if somebody asked me, Mike, do you think the government knew about this? Well, of course they did. Bill Clinton, on March 13th, 1997, was at golfer Greg Norman's home in Key Biscayne, Florida. And this is where, if you remember, when he was at golfer Greg Norman's home, that Bill Clinton twisted his knee and hurt it real bad and had to be rushed out of Greg Norman's home and flown back to Washington, D.C. because he hurt his knee. And then you see Clinton in the wheelchair and all this other stuff. Clinton never had an operation on his knee. He, if you recall, he was in the wheelchair, then he had his crutches and all this stuff, made all kinds of news. But Bill Clinton was a ham bone. He loved photo ops. There's no picture of an operation on his knee. Bill Clinton was taken out of Greg Norman's home because of the mass sighting in Arizona, in my opinion, and the reoccurrence of the mass sighting at 10:25 that night in North Phoenix that nobody talks about. And that's because it's too confusing, and it confuses people with the 10 o'clock flare drop south of Phoenix. And here we have a mass sighting at 10:25 in Cave Creek in North Scottsdale, where the retired airline captain, Trig Johnston, saw the large V-shaped craft. And in his report, it said that it had an inside area of over a square mile, and he could easily land his 737 on the wing of the craft. But yes, the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, was involved in the Phoenix Lights case to some degree, as he was evacuated out of golfer Greg Norman's home in Key Biscayne, Florida. They called it March 14th because it was in the late hours of March 13th. At 10:30 in Arizona, it's already 12:30 March 14th in Key Biscayne, Florida, and that's why nobody connected the two dots.
So you think that the reason he was rushed away from Greg Norman's home and back to Washington was because of emergency meetings relative to the so-called Phoenix Lights?
I think it was more to get the President of the United States to a secure location, because they really didn't know just how intense this was.
Mm-hmm.
This was a mass sighting. I have a report from a pilot, 2:30 in the morning, March 14th, trying to land his corporate jet in Prescott. Love Field, between Prescott, Arizona, and Chino Valley, Arizona's Love Field. And when we moved up to Prescott Valley, there was a newspaper article about us and everything, and we were trying to get new witnesses up there. And I got an email from this guy who was a pilot trying to land a corporate jet. He had to circle for a good deal of time and then come in from a direction unfamiliar to him, because the military said that that was a secure area at that time. So, yes, they were involved. That's a good one.
So the
people
military
don't know about that, because I'm held to a degree to keep people's names and emails and things like that private. I also, if I can go ahead and say this, I also met, when that article came out in the Prescott Courier newspaper, I was contacted by one of the flight instructors at Embry-Riddle. And Embry-Riddle is a school of very smart kids and pilots, and they do touch-and-goes at Love Field that night. And this instructor was with a student pilot at 8:25 p.m. over Chino Valley. They were up in the air in a Cessna, and they looked down, and they thought there was a power outage because everything was black. There was no lights of home, street lights. There was none of that over Chino Valley. And then a few seconds later, they started seeing lights, and that's when they realized that this large V-shaped craft had passed under them, and they both thought they were going to die, but they didn't. It just passed peacefully under them and kept on going. I'm held by my integrity, I guess is the word, not to disclose this man who was a flight instructor at Embry-Riddle, but I believe every word he said. I mean, I had lunch with him. We spent about 3 hours together, and there's no question. This mass sighting in Arizona on March 13th, 1997, was way, way more than just a string of lights. Okay, it's very intense. And I've promised myself I was going to write a book, but I'm not. And, you know, I'm going to be one of those people that don't write the book. I'll do talk shows. The reason that there's no book is there's no conclusion. We don't know, just like you said, Kevin, we don't know what they are, who they are, where they're from. We don't know anything.
No. We do know the incidents in detail.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And they're fantastic. You know, my sighting's boring compared to some of these.
Well, let me get to a flash message that we have from Australia. Let's see. This is from Kevin in Australia. He says, "Hi, Kev and guest. Happy season's greetings." Thank you very much, Kevin. He says, "The Phoenix Light incident. Was there any large water deposits, and did anyone notice any activity at the same time as the Phoenix Lights event?" Well, the answer is Phoenix is in a desert. There is no large body of water near Phoenix. You do have a lake. It's northwest of Phoenix, right?
Lake Pleasant.
Yeah. But it's not a big lake. There's no large body of water near Phoenix. It is desert. It's the place, Kevin, you've heard me say, summertime in Phoenix is like living in the northern suburbs of hell. And, I mean, it is hot and it's dry, really dry. When they have a heavy rain out there, that's 4 drops of water on your windshield instead of 2. And then he's got a second one here. Did the flare show up on radar? And were there any eyewitnesses of blue flashes on the ground and any cloaking incidents by eyewitnesses? Yeah, there was a cloaking incident you told us about. I guess you could call it that, where the 3 V-shapes pancaked and then disappeared.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's another. As a matter of fact, part of my sighting, you could use that, is once we had what I call a happy face quarter moon that night. It was setting to the south-southwest.
Okay.
And the object, as it passed into bright light, and a lot of witnesses said this, when it passed over stars or anything like that, is there was like a mirage effect. It was like looking through water at this. There was a stealth part of this where it had a hard time with bright light. And, yes, that did occur, and that is something that I don't really talk about. When I meet witnesses and stuff, I let them bring that one up, and a lot of them did. When it passed over their heads and there were a bright star up above, they could still see the star, but it was like looking through water. So if you say a cloaking device, yes, and that was one of the unusual effects of the craft, yes.
All right, so what about the flares? Did they show up on radar?
Nobody's ever said that. I've never heard that before. They're too low.
I don't think anybody's
ever asked.
Yeah, they're small.
One of the biggest mistakes that were made early on in March 13th is the March 14th, 15th. Nobody went to the main radar station in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Nobody went there to get the transcripts or the readings from the radar. There was an article that was on the internet in 97 that talked about the Navy GOES-8 satellite, the Navy GOES-8 satellite, which had images all over Arizona. And it's a maritime satellite. I mean, it's a Navy satellite, but it covers California and Arizona. And when chatter got on the internet about that right there, then the GOES-8 went away. I mean, there was nothing from March 13th from that point on, but there was a lot of images. If you went to the GOES-8 website and to March 13th and the 8, 9, 10 o'clock hour, there were a lot of hits.
All right, then he also asked about blue flashes on the ground. Was there any reporting of blue flashes on the ground?
Somebody altered one of my reports that there was a blue laser beam from the craft to the ground. I have never said that. I have heard that, but I've never said that, and it was not in my report. Somebody altered a report that I had out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the answer to that question is yes, there was a couple sightings where there was a blue flash of light or laser beam or whatever you want to call it from the craft to the ground, yes. Good question. Not too many people know about that.
Well, I didn't know about that. What do you suspect the blue light, the beam of light was about?
No idea. unless they were, you know, making topographical images of the surface below. I have no idea. You know, people saw red orbs, white orbs, amber orbs. Along the side of the craft were, that we saw, were the red orbs. You know, people say they saw the red orbs detach from the craft, and when they detached, the, where it was red on the craft, it now became white. The red orbs, transversed on their own. A lot of stories about that. Bill Greiner saw the orbs over, Luke Air Force Base. Scott Montgomery videoed those orbs. There was so many things, and this is why producers don't even want to get into this, because it gets confusing. And to me, it's fascinating. It's not confusing. But there's a little bit of everything seen that night. I mean, the Saracens saw a 2-mile-wide triangle. You know, you really don't hear too much about that. They call it the mile-long craft or the mile-wide craft, but I always said from the nose to the end of the left wing was approximately 5,000 feet. The computer image put it about 6,000 feet, but, you know, let's face it, people have a hard enough time with a mile-long craft.
Well, what do you think? Now, these orbs that were over Luke Air Force Base, and you got those on videotape. Okay. But now you're talking about how they were detaching from
the main craft.
The main craft. Apparently these orbs then that are over Luke Air Force Base must be near home. They must be near the main craft, right?
Oh, absolutely. The large craft was seen throughout. I mean, like I said, there was three of them that we know of. Could have been more. It's really hard to pinpoint everything down. See, here's what happened. We lost thousands of witnesses. And by lost, I mean this. TV and radio, in the early days after this main sighting on March 13th, TV and radio in Phoenix area were just harassing and making fun and teasing witnesses. We lost a lot of witnesses. When I say we, I'm not involved in this. I'm just one of the witnesses myself. But we lost a lot of witnesses that just did not want to come forward to be humiliated. Mm-hmm. What they should have done early on was to announce, hey, if you saw this, if you saw something on March 13th, you know, contact us, let us know. And then we could have put together the whole statewide map. Yes, you'd probably had some phony calls, but you'd have got mostly real people that saw real things that night. But instead, they did the opposite. They turned people off by humiliating them and teasing them. And a lot of people can't take that. Let me tell you something. As a witness, you develop a thicker skin.
You got to learn to bite back, too.
Well,
you know, if the interviewer is being an ass, you need to take a bite out of it.
Yeah, or just hang up.
Oh, I think you need to take a bite.
I do. Well, you're if I love going into debates with people like James McGahee. Okay, I love that. I look forward to that because I have facts. I have all this stuff in my mind. I look forward to challenging this guy.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back right after this, folks. Find your phone.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And you have the opportunity to talk to one of the most knowledgeable people on the planet when it comes to this fantastic mass sighting incident that happened back in 1997. A lot of you were well aware of that at the time it was happening, because at that time Art Bell was on the air, and Art Bell had people calling and telling him what was going on. He was relating that to the audience as it was happening, and so a lot of you through the Art Bell show were getting to sort of experience what was happening at the time it was happening. Well, this is one of the witnesses, Mike Fortson, and Mike is extremely knowledgeable about the whole incident, actually multiple incidents that took place that have come to be known collectively as the Phoenix Lights. Please keep in mind, it was not just over Phoenix, folks. This happened over several states and Mexico. And it was a mass event. And there was not just one vehicle in the air. There were multiple vehicles in the air. Do you get frustrated, Mike, when people talk about this as though it was just one something that flew over and people mistook it?
Yes and no. Okay, yes, I get frustrated, but you know what I tell people is you need to have your own experience with this. You know, you can listen to witnesses and read stories and read on the internet, and you can get all this information, and yet you're still kind of skeptical. You know, you know were they off on their size and the heights and, you know, the numbers and all this. But to the witnesses, I'm fascinated with. I mean, I love meeting new witnesses, sitting down, talking with them, listening to them. That's the key, listen. And the witnesses are what I enjoy making contacts with. It's frustrating with the media, per se, because they have their own agenda.
Oh, boy, do they.
That's a proper word.
Yeah.
Well, they're told. They mm-hmm. You know, most of them, Kevin, most of them don't do their homework. You know, I got a phone call about 2 months ago, and well, an email and then a phone call. There's a company in France, Paris. They want to come to Arizona and do a documentary on the Phoenix Lights. Well, they knew nothing of the Phoenix Lights except what they read on the internet. And what you read on the internet is about half correct and half not correct. And the timeline's off. There is no proper timeline out there that you can find. So, you know, I refused the show. I just told him, I said, man, you got to do your homework. I mean, you know, sit down and read. Take a couple days and study all you can about this, because it's more than what you think it is, and I don't have time to educate you.
Yeah.
So it's a little and I don't want to sound arrogant there, but, you know, the bottom line is it's not my job to teach them. I mean, they won't come here and do a show to entertain people and sell advertising. You know, I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, well, vain stream media, you know. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hey, Rusty, how are you?
Hi, good. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Well, going from the argument, let's just say everybody thinks the Phoenix Lights are real. What did the, I'll call them aliens for lack of a better word, what did they accomplish by having this such a mass sighting? Let's look at that from their point. What was their objective, you think?
I have no idea what their objective was, but whatever it was successful. They traversed throughout the United States at low altitude, slow, without challenge. They got, you know, when you ask what their objective was, you know, that reminds me of what a friend of mine in Indianapolis said. He's an engineer, and he goes, Mike, he goes, look, he goes, they don't build craft that are a mile long for no reason whatsoever. Every square inch of that would have a purpose. So, you know, I have no idea what their purpose was, but whatever it was, they were successful. Because they appeared and disappeared without challenge. They were in the state of Arizona, as far as we know of, from 5:30 p.m. till well past 2 o'clock in the morning, unchallenged. There was no need by the military to go to DEFCON 3 or anything like that, because they had issued a statement that there was no threat to our national security. And whether or not that's for us so we can sleep good at night, I don't know. But I think their objective is that they did it because they could do it. And they did it. And they haven't been back, to my knowledge, at least in Arizona, in the mass sighting like this. But those type craft are seen all over the world and have been for the last, probably, since the early 50s, this type of craft has been seen. There was an article today at theufochronicles.com. 1950s, they had these sightings. So they've been around for a long time. We're just not doing, we don't know a whole lot about it, and the military or the government is not informing us about this, nor should they, I guess. But, you know, the objectives of our visitors, I think was done. You know, they came into our airspace, they did what they wanted, and they left without challenge.
So the way you're so involved in that, do you think possibly the Phoenix Lights was the disclosure everyone's been waiting for?
No, I think the disclosure everyone's waiting for, Rusty, is an actual physical daytime mass sighting, daytime, where everybody can see it. It's in public. It's not at Area 51. It's not in a hidden location. It's not in a military base. It's public. It's over a major city or a sporting event, low daylight, and everybody sees it, films it, and YouTubes it, and everything else. That's the first step into disclosure.
Well, let me redefine something here. That's revelation. Disclosure is to tell what you know. And revelation is happening. They're revealing themselves every time they show up. And this was one of the most spectacular revelations of them to us. Disclosure means, it's like disgorge. It means to vomit out what you know.
Well, I think what he's meaning is,
I know what he means.
What a lot of us are waiting on is the open disclosure on the subject.
Well, disclosure will be when the government talks and tells us what they know, and I don't think that's ever coming. But revelation, I think, is happening, and I think it's happening every single day, all around the world, where they reveal themselves. Now, if there's a big mass sighting like you've described in the daytime, they get out of the ship and they say, "We're here now." That's revelation. That's them revealing themselves. And I think if our governments, and I say plural, governments all around the world continue to keep this secret and lie about it, then at some point, I think we can expect that these guys are just going to land and say, "Well, we're here. And so we're going to tell you all about this. And by the way, that guy over there that you call your president has known about this for a long time, and he's been lying to you." I mean, that'll be revelation. But, Rusty, I don't think disclosure from our government is ever going to happen. I don't think the truth is not in them.
Well, can I say something here, Kevin?
Sure.
I think the government will say something after a public sighting, a mass sighting, and once it becomes known, it's on all the radio and TV, it's everywhere, it's daytime, it makes the news everywhere, it's the greatest day in the history of the earth, you know, we made contact, there are other beings, we're not alone in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem that I see is interest, is I believe that if they landed, they're in trouble. And they're in trouble, and it's because of what we would do. You know, they may come here with all the answers to our problems of cancer and the cold, the flu, you know, how to achieve better energy and all this. But I think our true goal is, and what our interest in them is, for their weapons.
Sure.
And that's it. It's strictly weapons. And I don't think it has anything to do with what they could do to help the earth or the people of the earth. It would be which government can get the biggest gun from E.T.
I think that's the way the governments look at it, yeah. I sure do.
And if something came out where there were a public landing and there was a sighting, it was a mass sighting, I mean, it's all over the news, everybody sees it, majority of people believe it, they don't think it's Steven Spielberg production or anything like that, you know, I think what's going to happen is the government will come forward and say, "Well, you know, we do have visitors," but I think that they probably won't go back 60 years or 70 years, 65 years to Roswell and start, you know, opening up the books and saying, "Yes, we're aware all this happened in all these years, the crash at Roswell, the crash in Aztec, New Mexico in 48.
Because then they would have, you're exactly right, because then they have to admit, along with that story, all the crimes they've committed to keep it a secret.
All the lies.
Yeah. Well, and
look what they do to witnesses. You know, I mean, there's, look at the people that lost their lives in this. I mean, there's, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, go back to Forrestal. I mean, there's so many things, and you know, I love my country. I'm a patriot, but I fear my government. And you know, there's some dirty people out there, and they'll protect these secrets. You know, I mean,
yeah,
that's what they do.
No matter what. Rusty, did you have another question or comment?
Boy, I was just going to make a comment about I think the government's probably not telling us. Could be for some of the reasons you're doing, but you know. If they were to come out with it and they wanted to get out of it, they'd just blame it on the people that was before them in office, you know. So I don't know if that's really the reason why they're not saying it, because they get in so much trouble. They just blame it on the guy before them.
Yeah, yeah. Or they could just say, well, blame it on the libertarians.
Well,
you know,
blame it on
somebody
other than themselves. So I don't know if that's the real reason why, you know, they haven't come out and admit it, or they don't like to admit that there's UFOs. I think there's got to be something else besides that. Just a speculation, but all right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for the call.
Welcome, Rusty. Merry Christmas.
623-444-5889, and we would love to hear from you. 623-444-5889. If you're outside the USA, outside of Canada, you may use the additional feature we have for you called a flash message. Just go over to the website and scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above the picture you will see a link that says Flash Message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Kevin. And Mike, thank you for being on this show, and I want to express my gratitude to you for the moral courage that you have in sustaining your stand and staying active in this thing and refusing to put it down. You know, it's people like you who keep this thing alive, you know, and keep it before the public eye, you know, that will keep people asking questions. You know, there'll be little question marks over their heads as they walk around in their daily lives, you know, wondering, you know, well, if this happened then, you know, what's going to happen next? And Mike, I have to ask you this too. You said you were at Grissom Air Force Base back in the 70s, right?
I lived in Kokomo, Indiana from 1959 to 1971, and just north of Kokomo, Indiana is Peru, Indiana, where it used to be Bunker Hill Air Force Base, a SAC base, then it became Grissom Air Force Base, yes.
Well, the reason I was bringing that up is, I was going to say, well, then you must know where Peru, Indiana is, and that's my hometown.
Absolutely.
All right. So greetings to you from one former Hoosier to another person who at least spent a little bit of time in Indiana.
Yeah.
And thanks again for the work that you do and the courage you display and for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show.
Okay. Now, Steve, I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Hang on. Got a break, and then I'll ask you. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are now on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show, and we're talking with Mike Fortson. We have on the telephone with us Steve from Georgia, and I have a question for you, Steve. You said, as one former Hoosier to someone who spent a little time in Indiana, explain to the world, what the heck is a Hoosier?
Well, there's a lot of debate about that. Even in Indiana, a lot of people don't know for sure. They think it has to do with there was a big river culture. You know, a lot of people using the riverways early in the settling of the state of Indiana when it was Indiana Territory, and it was more Indians than Europeans. And the river people and the people who were trying to establish agriculture, because there's a lot of fertile land in Indiana too, and They used to shout back and forth, "Who's your daddy?" and "Who's your your boss?"
Okay,
who's your boss and who's your, you know, they tried to identify each other or get some kind of a thing going.
Okay, all right.
I think, so anyway, you have that's the best thing I can come up with for that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure the folks in Indiana would have a different opinion about how that came about. Who's your daddy? Oh, my goodness. Thanks for the call, Steve.
Oh, you bet.
All right. Oh, my. Did you catch all of that, Mike?
Well, I did. And you know, and I grew up there. I went to, I don't know, from kindergarten all the way to senior in high school in Indiana. And the thing that I was told and that I remember is in the winters, is, you know, people didn't have, you know, a lot of heat. And when somebody had beat on the door, they would say, "Who's there?" And that pretty much was where Hoosier came from, is "Who's there?" But in the way they said it. I kind of liked his, too, "Who's your daddy?"
Who's your daddy?
Yeah. I think that was a little bit after the time. But nonetheless, that's a good question. It's a great state, great basketball. I live in Arizona and I love it, but, you know, I'll be honest with you. You know, talking about Indiana, you know, Indiana around Bloomington, Indianapolis, Carmel, there's a lot of sightings in that area, especially the red orbs.
Yeah.
A lot of sightings in Indiana.
Out in Arizona, of course, it's famous now because of this event, these events that we've been talking about tonight. But Arizona has historically been a hot spot for UFO sightings, and people are still seeing UFOs out there. Nothing on the scale of what happened in 1997, but they're still seeing lots of UFOs out there. Why do you suspect Arizona would be a hot spot for UFOs?
I think the native Indian population in northeastern Arizona, well, Arizona's a lot of reservation.
Yeah.
The Hopis, they believe they came from the stars. The Estrella Mountains, gateway to the stars. It's open. I mean, you know, there's 6 million people in Arizona, but, man, there's a lot of open territory out here.
Mainly open.
Yes, and, I mean, there's a lot of areas, I mean, for testing, landing. I think California, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, I think, you know, just being in the Southwest, I think there, maybe the minerals, maybe granite, what attracts them, I have no idea. Gold, who knows? I'm thankful for all the sightings. I've been able to enjoy a few, and I like that, and I still look. I consider myself a sky watcher, avid. I don't do it like I used to back in 97, 98, 99, but, you know, my eyes are always in the sky when I'm outside. I'm always trying to, I'll tell you something personal, and this is from the soul, is when I'm outside and I'm at peace and I sit down, I will think very hard. Because a lot of people have said what we saw was very telepathic. A lot of people, like myself, you know, I woke from a brief nap and I was, you know, then I was a part of it. I think there is a connection there, and I give thanks. I give thanks for the sighting that I had and what I got to enjoy. I give thanks every day for that. I do hope to see it again. I totally hope to see it again. Don't know if I ever will. It might be one of those things that's just once in a lifetime, but I'm always thinking and hoping that I get another chance. I hope that they're aware of that. Like I said earlier, I have a lot of questions that I'd like to ask. I'd like to know, you know, where they're from, who they are, why they're here, do they worship a god, you know, how do they feel about the creation.
Why would that be important to you?
It's just things I want to know.
If when that craft was passing over you, they had telepathically communicated with you and said, we are not a threat, and if they had said, do you want to come with us, would you have gone?
In a heartbeat. There's three known cases of communication that I'm aware of. Retired airline captain Trigg Johnson was told we are not a threat as it passed over his head at 10:25 p.m. in Cave Creek, which is north of Phoenix. The Bradley Evans family were driving up the Interstate 10 from Tucson to Phoenix. There were five people in their car. This is a fantastic sighting. Hope you got a minute for me to tell you this one.
Well, anyway, I'll tell you what. We have 3 minutes before we got a – no, we have 2.5 minutes.
I'll tell it real fast.
All right.
They were communicated with as she was driving up the interstate. They saw a string of red lights heading for them. It drew their attention. As the lights got over their car, they're heading north. The lights are heading south. As the lights got over their car, it reversed itself and was now going backwards, staying with them, going 75 miles an hour up the interstate. She was told telepathically, this does not concern you. Keep on driving. And for the next 20 minutes, that craft was over their car. They were watching it, and they had camera equipment in the back seat because the daughters were going to a swim meet. No one took a picture. She did not stop. They didn't get out. And they watched it for 20 minutes. They watched it from just before Casa Grande to right at the south edge of Phoenix Metro. And she was told, do not stop. This does not concern you. Keep on driving. I have their 5-page report.
Wow.
Yes, sir. There was an SRP worker who was coaxed out of the Elliott Road and Elliott and Kyrene. It's an SRP substation. There was a worker there. He was working in the garage. He was summoned out of the garage to see the craft. He was told, we will be back.
Really?
Yes.
So yes, you have every expectation they'll be back then.
Well, I'm hoping. I truly do hope. His report was at theufochronicles.com. I hope you don't mind me saying that.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I spent quite a little bit of time on the telephone with Frank Warren today.
I know.
Oh, you do? Are you psychic, or did he tell you?
he found a problem, and he tried to Google you or something, and I told him that I was going to be on your show, and Frank's a very dear friend of mine. He's like the best friend I've never met.
Okay.
And, you know, me and him...
You got 30 seconds.
We've known each other for 11 years, and his website, theufochronicles.com, if you scroll way down on the right-hand side, you'll find Mike Fortson and all the articles that I've written about March 13th.
Outstanding. Well, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, and if you will, stay on the line with me here for just a moment as I bring this in for a landing.
Okay, Kevin.
All right, folks, there's Mike Fortson. Mike is truly one of, if not the most knowledgeable person on the planet when it comes to this whole incident that has come to be called the Phoenix Lights. It's not the Phoenix Lights. Yeah, it flew over Phoenix. They flew over Phoenix. Not just one vehicle, several. But it's not the Phoenix Lights. This happened in several states. And for several hours, this was not just a little flash in the sky. This was a long, mass sighting over several states and Mexico. So it's a big, big deal. And you got to ask yourself, why do we always only hear about one craft going over Phoenix? And you got to ask yourself, why do we always hear the same stuff? Well, that's why you listen to this show. You don't hear the same stuff. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.